Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Hope you had a great Christmas. Those of you who celebrate Christmas, later we'll do a call-in on what presents you're definitely holding on to and which you may re-gift. But you know, I knew for months that we would be having this first conversation today. You knew it too. Howard Schultz from Starbucks knew it. But none of us could prevent it. So here we are, puppets on a political string. We will have this conversation because we can't not have it. So here goes. It's December 26th, 5 days until New Year's, which means 5 days to the so-called fiscal cliff. It's a fiscal cliffhanger, ha ha ha. Will Washington take us over the edge? What will happen if they do? Is it really like a cliff at all, or more like a gentle slope with a WWE-style politics amusement park along the shoulders? Will it matter that Starbucks has directed all its D.C. baristas to write, "Come together" on every cup of brew? And will those coffee workers really be happy with the compromise they seem to be pushing? With us for this inevitable but hopefully not predictable conversation is Ben White, chief economics correspondent for Politico. He covers the intersection of economics and politics. Hi, Ben. Thanks for coming back early from your Christmas break, just like Congress and the president, to obsess about the cliff. And let me be the first to wish you a happy new year.
Well, thank you, and to you as well. And I get the sense, Brian, that this is not the first thing you'd like to be talking about the day after Christmas.
Right. Or will it be a happy new year? Scenario number one, we wake up on New Year's morning a little hungover from our ironic fiscal cliff end of the Mayan calendar harmonic convergence party, make some black coffee, homebrew, not Starbucks takeout, turn on NPR and hear no deal. What actually changes if we reach that moment?
Well, the first things that change are the expiration of the payroll tax cut, the expiration of unemployment benefits for many Americans still out of work. I think those are the first two things that start to take money out of people's paychecks right away and impact the economy right away. Most of the other stuff is later in the year. The spending cuts and the sequester are played out through the course of the year. And even the tax increases that would automatically happen can be delayed by the IRS in terms of, putting them into people's paychecks in terms of their belief that a deal will ultimately be made in January. But those couple of things, an increase in the payroll tax and an expiration of unemployment benefits, immediately take money out of the economy. That's money that people spend right away, and that'll have an impact.
How much of that, including the unemployment checks and the payroll tax bite from our paychecks, how much of that is, reparable by retroactive legislation?
It's reparable. All of it is reparable, but it's, you can't repair the money that's already, not been spent and has been reduced from people's paychecks. So, you can fix it. Ultimately, you can reinstate the payroll tax cut and withholding will change. You can, reinstate unemployment benefits and people who got cut off the rolls will get put back on the rolls, but that takes time.
Is it just put back on the rolls, or is it likely to be retroactive, unemployment checks, let's say?
Yeah, that's unknown at this point. I think that would depend on what's in the legislation. Conceivably, it could be retroactive, but they'll have to deal with that next year in the next session and figure out how to do that. And as we know, it takes Congress time to do anything. So,
here's a clip of Newark Mayor Cory Booker on ABC this week on Sunday saying, basically, don't sell poor people down the river in any deal, that as mayor of Newark, as mayors and governors all around the country, he has not had the luxury to deal with something like a fiscal cliff and a lot of debt. Listen.
But this is what I've learned in Newark. If you start cutting programs for the poor, you start to inflict a damage not on the poor, but on yourself. Because in this country, it's the truth. It's easier to raise strong children than to heal broken men. Wonder why we have such expensive prison systems, why we have such high medical costs. It's because we're not making the front-end investments.
Cory Booker, mayor of Newark, on ABC This Week. So Ben White from Politico. It sounds like that's part of the debate that the Democrats are having among themselves about how much of a spending cut compromise to come to with the Republicans, and what really are going to be the impacts on poor people?
Yeah, that's certainly part of the conversation, and particularly when it comes to any entitlement program changes, do they want to trade off a lot of, continued pretty high-end tax cuts in return for, means testing Social Security or, raising the retirement age or making cost of living adjustments that will reduce the size of Social Security payments. It's that, and it's also, discretionary spending levels. You reduce that, you're automatically going to be reducing programs that serve the poor. And even if you reduce the Bush-level tax cuts to, $250,000, $500,000, you're still giving a lot of tax relief to people at the high end who don't necessarily need it or spend it in return for cutting programs that serve people who have a lot less money and are a lot less well off. So it's difficult for the Democratic caucus to countenance that in some regards. So it's, getting to a final grand bargain is hard both on the Republican and the Democratic side at this point.
And that's if they do come to a deal. If they don't come to a deal, different kinds of spending cuts take effect in the so-called sequester budget, which is, what they came to when they couldn't agree on a long-term deal the last time around. And this whole sequester budget is there just to hold a guillotine over Congress's head and say, oh, these horrible cuts will take effect unless you reach an actual long-term deficit-cutting deal of some kind. And we know there are deep Pentagon spending cuts. These keep getting talked about. But what actually gets cut on the domestic side? Because I think that's a little of what Mayor Booker was referring to as well, things that would take effect if they don't come to a deal that would impact the poor in Newark and elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're talking about $1 trillion in total cuts, half from Pentagon, but half from domestic spending on food programs, education programs, things that I don't have a specific list of everything, but they are specific programs that folks in Newark and elsewhere depend on in a lot of instances, for education and food and other basic necessities that would be cut and would come out of this sequester budget. So everybody focuses on the Pentagon side of it, and it gets sort of the heaviest lobbying from the defense industry to avoid, but it is pretty evenly split between cuts that were designed to, quote-unquote hurt Republicans, which tends to be the defense industry cuts, and, Republicans are historically more aligned with that constituency, but also domestic programs that the Democrats are very in favor of and have pushed over the years. So, that gets less attention, but it would be across the board, and it would hit just about everything that the government does. So it's not solely the defense industry that gets hit in the sequester.
We are 5 days and some number of hours before the U.S. reaches the so-called, and I emphasize so-called, fiscal cliff. Listeners, if you want to get in as either advocates or pundits, call us up right now. Tell us what you think will happen when the clock strikes midnight on New Year's, or tell us what you would like to happen. Do you have a rooting interest here? Are you following this as kind of an advocate and thinking, okay, Democrats or okay, Republicans, here's what you should do. Here's how you should compromise. Here's how you should hold firm. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. As we talk to Ben White of Politico, the chief economics correspondent who covers the intersection between economics and politics, 212-433-9692 for your punditry or advocacy on the fiscal cliff, or post it to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And let's get to the politics, Ben. Boehner's Plan B fell apart in his own House Republican caucus. The president has proposed kind of a Plan C, which entails a short-term tax-based deal. What can you tell us about it?
Yeah, I mean, the president's proposal is back to what the Senate has done previously, essentially, which is allow the Bush tax cuts for everyone with income $250,000 and below to continue and let them lapse to Clinton-era rates above $250,000. He would also extend unemployment benefits as part of his proposal, but it's not clear what else would be in a bill that would come out of the Senate that the president would help craft. He didn't give many specifics before he left for Hawaii on the alternative minimum tax or payroll tax cut or, a number of other things that you would think would go into a final deal. So, and the question then becomes, Can that get out of the Senate? Does Mitch McConnell and his Republican caucus allow it to? Do they filibuster something in the Senate? And then if they allow it to get through the Senate, can John Boehner bring it to the floor of the House? And will he allow a vote on it that would be mainly Democrats supporting it with perhaps half of the Republican caucus? And I think, to me, the sticking point may be that 250,000 level. As we know, the president in previous talks with Boehner had gotten to 400,000. Yeah. He'd moved the level up. And Republicans are just going to have a lot of trouble swallowing, moving it back down to 250,000. Democrats want that. The president wants that. He sort of reset his baseline negotiating level there. But I have a little bit of trouble seeing that, A, get through the Senate, and B, get through the House.
Republicans are saying the president is playing hardball here, trying to get a tax hike for wealthy Americans without actually committing to new spending cuts.
Right.
Is that what's going on?
Well, I don't think so, really. I mean, he did lay on the table $1 trillion worth of cuts when he was talking to Speaker Boehner. The Republicans count spending cuts a little differently than the president, so they didn't think he was at $1 trillion, but it wasn't far from that. I don't think they were that far off in terms of the level of spending cuts. And the ironic thing about the Republican position on that is that they continuously demand that they want these, you know, dollar-for-dollar spending cuts or even more to match any tax increases, but they're very reluctant to say exactly what it is that they want because it entails cutting Medicare, Social Security, other programs that are very popular. They want to cut these things, but they don't want to have the fingerprints that it was their idea to do it. So it's sort of a tough spot to be in to say you're not serious about spending cuts, but we're not going to tell you what spending cuts we want. So I don't think that's a very fair criticism of the president.
Fred in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Fred.
Hi, how you doing?
All right, happy holidays.
Oh, I listen all the time. I'm listening about all of this, and I my opinion is that in spite of all of the conflict, that the parties will not let this thing come down to abyss, if you will. It's all going to come together. It's all going to come together. And they will do it at brinksmanship, because that's what politicians do. I mean, they tempt each other right down to the end.
So this is all a dance, almost like I was in
this time around with Obama's leadership. I think they will come together.
So Fred, like I was indicating in the intro to the segment, you think it's all a dance? They knew they were going to take us to this point because this is how
Absolutely.
Each is going to get the best deal for their side.
Yeah, I believe but that. I mean, I believe that because, I mean, I listen all the time, you know, and they do a dance. They mm-hmm. do this, you know, because they have to. They're politically sort of divergent, you know.
Yeah. And Fred, I'm going to leave it there and get a response from our guest. But, Ben, that's, I think, that not everybody in Washington is as confident as Fred that this is kind of a routine negotiating dance. And then on December 31st at 7:30, you know, before they go to their New Year's parties, they come to a deal. I heard a robust debate on a conservative talk show this weekend about whether it's worse for them if they cave to the president's short-term fix that we just described, or worse for them if they stand against it and go over the cliff. So that's a serious debate among conservatives. I'm sure there's a serious debate among Democrats, too. But either way, they were betting that President Obama is completely prepared to go over the cliff and thinks it will be to his political advantage toward a final deal. So I wonder if you have an opinion about this and whether Fred, the caller, is too sanguine.
I think he's a little bit too sanguine. I mean, I will say that I was sort of in Fred's camp at the outset, that these sort of, you know, fiscal showdowns tend to play out along fairly familiar lines, and they often get to the 11th hour, as they did with the debt ceiling the last time around, the summer of 2011, and some, you know, fix is made, some patch is made that's not ideal, that puts us in this situation again down the road as we are now. That was my sort of baseline belief. I'm a little less confident that that's the case for some of the reasons that you just described in the politics of the thing. They're very complicated, they're very multi-layered, and it's really hard for anyone to know exactly how it ends. But in terms of the president's willingness to go over the cliff, there's very divergent opinion on that. I think it's partially true that he is. I mean, if we do go over the cliff, he gets a lot more tax revenue. Taxes go up, and he gets to start the debate about, you know, which of those taxes should then be reduced again. But at the same time, you know, he's starting his second term with a big sort of failure of governance in that instance, and also a threat to the economy, a threat to markets. He doesn't want to be operating in a bad economy in his second term if he wants to accomplish really anything. So I don't think he entirely, you know, would like to see us go over the cliff. For Republicans, it's really an exquisite dilemma for them. You know, they get tagged as tax raisers if they vote for any deal that increases marginal tax rates, and they open themselves up to the threats of primaries in 2014 from the right, from the Tea Party caucus. But if they don't agree to a deal, taxes go up massively. It's the largest tax cut in American history, and right. They can also get criticized for that. The flip side is if we go into next year, taxes have already gone up, they can vote for a tax cut to, you know, try to fix some of this stuff. So I think he is too sanguine. I think there's a lot of moving parts that need to get finished in a very short period of time. I do think it's possible that it gets done in a very basic way in the next, you know, 5-6 days, but I would put the chances at 50-50 at best.
Here's John in Amityville, who's going to lean the other way from Fred. Hi, John.
Yeah, hi. Good morning. Yeah, I completely disagree. I think Congress is so dysfunctional, the Senate and the House, that I don't think they're going to come to any agreement. They're so dug in to their positions.
We have a terrible line, so I'm going to go, but I certainly get what you're saying, that they're so dug in, Congress is so dysfunctional, they're not going to come to a deal. Ultimately, it becomes in their political interest on both sides to come to some kind of deal, whether that's, you know, after the credit rating gets cut again, whether that's not until the next time the debt ceiling comes up so the Republicans have more leverage, which is after the first of the year. I think those are some of the things that remain to be seen. But let's go out on this, Ben. One hopeful scenario, and it's just a scenario, tell me how realistic you think it might be. Boehner's plan B failed with the right wing of his House Republicans, as we know. So is it a possible scenario that Boehner and Obama make a big deal that draws the centrist Republicans and the more centrist Democrats into a majority coalition while leaving the real conservatives and the real progressives unhappy?
I think that's a possibility. I think the more likely scenario is not that Boehner and Obama come to that agreement, because at least in the short term before the end of the year, I don't think that's going to happen. I think it's more likely that you know, Republicans in the Senate allow it to move forward. There's, you know, some more centrists there. There are folks who've already been on the record saying they would rather see taxes go up on everybody above $250,000 rather than go over the cliff. Johnny Isaacson from Georgia, some others. So I think it comes out of the Senate, and then the question becomes, does Boehner just sort of step away and allow it to come to the floor? And I don't think it's a grand bargain that includes a whole lot of spending cuts. I think it's mainly just dealing with the taxes issue. And that's a really open question as to whether he would allow that to happen. You know, there's the hard right wing of his caucus that would oppose it, and he's not going to get them under any circumstances, but are they loud enough to sort of block him from allowing that to happen? And what does he think about his chances for being reelected as Speaker next year? So I think eventually maybe he does step aside and allow it to come to the floor with a lot of Democratic support. But that's the only scenario I see in which we get past the cliff.
All right. Well, as you noted at the beginning, we might not rather be talking about this. We might rather be talking about, oh, New Year's resolutions, the Constitution in Egypt, you know, all kinds of fun stuff. But we have no choice. So we will keep talking about the fiscal cliff. And Ben White from Politico will keep covering it as their chief economics correspondent. Thank you very much for giving us some time on this holiday week.
Appreciate it. Thanks so much for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we will talk to the union president for New York City School Safety Agents. How close are the city schools to the NRA model of an armed guard in every school building? Stay with us.